Welcome to the MindBod Adventure Pod, where every week we dive into a different practice, a different perspective on life, and you come along to try it with us. Join us on Substack at mindbodpod.com to watch this episode as a video podcast. And if you want to support our crazy adventures and get fun perks like our weekly after party videos, consider becoming a paid subscriber. And now, on to this week's adventure.
Carolyn Casey, welcome to the podcast. We are very, very happy to have you here.
Wonderful. I'm just reaching for the coyote here. Okay, excellent.
Reaching for the coyote, is that an expression in the astrological language?
No, it's a literal part of my life. Because as you know, I lived with an actual coyote for 19 years, 2 months, 2 weeks, 2 days. So I did not know that. Oh, yeah. So I've earned my trickster credentials and tease it into us, because with coyotes, there's no shame. We've taught dogs shame. It's all wheel and deal. If I do this, then how about that? Well, how about two of those things? And I think this is an excellent guide for how we negotiate with the backstage sacred.
Is that a way to think about what astrology is? I mean, maybe that's our way in to introduce yourself maybe to our audience and what we're going to explore today. And I'd love to hear how you think about the practice of astrology.
Well, it's an exquisite language of our interior psyche, separated by a thin membrane we call identity, from the whole huge, big conversation, cultural and biological, which is delineated by the dance of the planets. Right? So everything going on in the world pours into us in some customized fashion. So when we talk about Pluto, death, rebirth, intensity, everything that is in need of death, rebirth pours into our own lives, right? And so it's like the micro of us and the macro. But, you know, as we're referring backstage, this is all about participatory, especially this year unfolding before us. Most important year of our life. I mean, people often say that, but this really is it, and crucial for all of us really to imbue whatever we think of as politics as a sacred realm of participation. Really crucial.
So why is this year the big year?
Why? Because the fate of the planet is on the table. Tyranny is on the rise. You know, one of the things that astrology is so brilliant at and so generous and kind and trying to help us out is to make all of our participatory skills available to us. Practical skills, metaphoric skills, language skills. But the backstage realm of the invisible, the Pluto realm or the Scorpio realm or what's called the eighth house realm, is also a place of effective participation. It's like one of my mentors, Dion Fortune, a great kind of scholar in the 1940s in Britain, said the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. And we go, right.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So we want to play with language crafting, but just to stay with that realm, you know, many ways to be effective. And I'm so fond of the writings of the novelist, animist novelist, Terry Pratchett and his witch novels. And a really great one that's super pertinent to us all is called I Shall Wear Midnight. And it's in which the cunning man has come to town and created mob mind. This is the backstage mind. And mob mind encourages people, it draws out the worst of people. It's the rough music that somebody picks up a stick and then somebody else picks up a stick and then somebody picks up a bomb or a rocket, whatever. And the task of the young girl witch, let's say it's all of us, is to dissolve the cunning man's power and to dissolve mob mind and to replace it with that which draws forth and invites the best of all of us to participate. So that's really crucial. And part of what we'll get to is that the young girl witch discovers that the cunning man, she says, mob mind, we can feel it in all of us when we go, ooh, I don't know why I said that mean thing. I don't know why I had that terrible thought. And we go, oh, it's the mob mind. Ooh. And she says, mob mind finds purchase in all whose hearts are full of grievance. It's like, ooh. Mm. So maybe we even begin with this. I think this is sort of essential as little things that we'll do that I invite people just to try this at home, keep practicing it. So It's like a friend of mine with whom I do political magic. And she said, what's the antonym of grievance? Antonym means kind of the opposite, antidote. And it's like, oh, good question. Because all tyranny runs on grievance. Like, you know, and so what is grievance? You know, and for all of us to wonder about that and maybe to define it. But at first I thought, I don't have grievance, you know, and then it's like, ooh, that mean thing that person did 2 years ago, like, ooh. And I think maybe we can keep grudges, right? Maybe. But grievance, for me, I go, well, grievance is anything that's an impediment to us bestowing a liberating blessing, which is why I love redefining the word forgive as to mean to give energy for change. Because then whom couldn't we forgive, including ourselves? For small and large, for using a styrofoam cup. You know, I give myself energy for change. You know, yeah. I give this person energy for change. Yeah.
Well, so. This is what I found so incredibly helpful. When I went through your visionary activist astrology, I think I mentioned I've gone through it a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And what it has really helped me with is it's given me this way to reframe what's happening in my life. A, to kind of reframe it as, oh, wow, all the things that I struggle with are the kind of underlying dynamics. These are sort of universal dynamics that actually are reflected meaningfully in everything else. As you say somewhere, it's like that's the essence of divination, where everything is written everywhere. So mm-hmm. whether you're looking at pig intestines or I Ching coins or the stars, if a close attention to the patterns tells you something about the pattern in your life. So that has been that really made me feel connected. And then as you go through each of the planets, it's like you highlight skillful ways to work with these different themes, theme of challenge, theme of emotions, theme of whatever it is that the planets kind of offer this instructive way through. And that to me is, it really opened up, wow, this is a deep practice here. It's not just the practice of mm-hmm. knowing, oh yeah, on Tuesday, there's going to be some hard things happening over here. This is
the practice,
interconnection.
Yeah, we want to throw passivity into the cauldron. It's not what's going to happen. That's irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's irrelevant. Right. It's what's available with which to participate. And yes. since you already invoked the word struggle, because it's so much a part of us, and I include myself, absolutely, when people say I've been struggling with this issue for years, and I go, well, what does it feel like if we replace the word struggling with dancing? I've been dancing with this issue for years. Because then it's like, ooh, it might be a tango, you know, but then we've got some movement. And then it's also like turning to mythology for practical guidance. Like when you meet demons, you know, what do you do? And you go, well, you always ask them, what's your story? But also all traditions really guide us to how do you dance with demons? And that's the backstage realm of efficacy and the realm of translating things into symbolism. So for instance, the world's on fire, and it's as though all the critters are backstage going, what are we going to do about the humans? We got to either kill them or heal them. Let's do both, right? And I think it's, you know, that we can go and say, oh water, we have been so rude. Can we negotiate to make some of what's literal metaphoric? If we treat water with more respect, can we have it be a metaphoric flood rather than a literal flood? And we'll invite people to play with this, but it's backstage wheel and deal. And given that for me, the divine is like a giant coyote bowing down in front of us going, woof, woof, wanna play? I like my image of the divine to be a little spicy trickster. And it's like, we do wanna play. And so trickster always says, you know, can we do this? And trickster coyote always says, well, what are you putting on the table? If we do this, then what are you offering? And that's useful for us all to think, like, what is our dedication? When I said to you, Tasha, and here you are, two Pisces, I go, it's the coolest time ever to be a Pisces, because it's the dedication to the power of imagination, so crucial. And the Pisces part of all of us is what has been forgotten that we must remember. Mm-hmm. And what has been exiled or imprisoned or undervalued, but is of great value. That's where the action is. And so that's part of that dynamic. So it's olly olly income free, you know, inquisition over, still terrible things going on in the world, but safer for everyone to unfurl into their authentic selves. Yeah.
That's great. So we're going to basically roll as you're speaking. You're just going to be basically rolling nonstop practices for reframing our experience.
Right.
And according to insights gleaned from close working with the planets. I mean, maybe could you just say a quick thing about the planets for people who don't know anything about astrology? Like,
yeah, well, it's really about it's the original language of interrelatedness, as above, so below, that anything anywhere is everywhere. So the planets are real, and metaphorically, they represent living qualities of intelligence that reside within us and connect us to the world. So as we mention planets to us all, you know, there's a little part of all of us that goes, hello, hello. They like to be talked to. So everyone has the planets. It's an inner democracy, you know. So, I mean, I'm a heretic even in the astrological community, because it's like they're all equal. It's an inner democracy in how to work out things, you know, negotiate. But the language craft, so we say, well, an astrology is a language of the interrelatedness of everything and restoring a sense of mythological literacy. We humans used to be intimate with the world. Dream interpreters of the world as if it were a dream, but practical, you know, early migration of geese, this kind of cloud, this going on means we should save this much quinoa. It was always a practical part, you know, the dreams and the imagination and the vision.
Yeah. Do you feel like where we are as, you know, as a society or humans, it's like we've kind of split the two, like split the astrological, and we kind of call it woo-woo, and then on the other side there's practical, but it almost becomes like hard practical. And what talking about is this union of the practical is magical.
They belong together. Ancient mind peers at the modern world, all of us, and going, why are you modern people always separating things that belong together? Imaginative skills are also our political skills, that in antiquity healing and art were one thing. In the modern world, we have hospitals and museums. Neither are that good. Okay, in ancient world, you cannot have healing without art or art without healing. They are one thing. And there's wonderful ways to participate and play. We pick up these things along the way that we keep in our pockets. And one of the things, when I was lucky enough to be in Syria when it was okay, I went with a wonderful friend who lives there, and we went to the oldest souk, the oldest marketplace in the world in Aleppo. Alas, alas. Mm. But we found the calligrapher at the heart of the souk. And he was at first very grumpy meeting Western women. But my friend spoke beautiful Arabic, and she introduced me to him as an astrologer. Now, this was a bearded, cleric, scowling, fundamentalist guy. And she introduced me to him as an astrologer, and he bowed in respect. And I said to my friend, what's this? And she said, well, it means something here. I'm like, whoa. So now we were okay. And he did this beautiful thing. He wrote beautiful healing words from the Quran with vegetable ink on rice paper, and then he put it in our tea so we could drink the words. It's like, oh,
wow.
Isn't that wonderful?
That's amazing. Yeah.
All kinds of ways to play, but this is in us. You know, the wonderful word endogenous, which means, you know, we have endogenous receptors for cannabis and DMT. We have endogenous receptors for mythology and astrology. Our psyche knows these things.
That was my experience listening to you. I feel like those receptors were waking up inside me, because you have such a, I mean, your history as a semiotician and just so broadly educated in myth and comparative mythology, I really felt like my cells were remembering.
Yeah.
It was like they were waking up to something they already knew.
I think the other side of that is when I was like a teenager, I used to have like this strong aversion to astrology. It was an aversion to like pop psychology and pop, like the way it's presented as like, and on Tuesday, you're going to meet someone real special. You know, like you can feel in your system that it's being boiled down to something that's commercial and it doesn't mean anything, right? But the anger comes from this hunger for the real thing, which is like, you know, exactly what we're talking about, these like deeper systems.
No, and that's a crucial great thing that you bring up. So, for instance, Saturn out there, Saturn in us, it lives below our navel in our hara. Saturn is authority. And how we define authority and leadership. And it's the part of us that defines, dedicates, and takes vows. So it's the part of us we all tend most to outsource authority to incompetent psychopaths as leaders or anything that makes us afraid. Just in the course of the day, right? Anything that makes us cringe, like, oh, I have to do that thing. You know? And then just in language craft, it sounds a little cheesy, but it's fun to replace have to with get to, right? I have to is outsourced authority, creates resistance. We're going to procrastinate as long as possible. I get to do this thing. We get to do this conversation together. How wonderful, you know, not have to.
It's true. It creates an immediate shift in your experience, that little miniature practice.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Just changing the way you use the language.
One word. I like to take, you know, speak truth to power, still unworked out issues with daddy. Speak truth, be power. Mm-hmm. We just experiment with just little things like, you know, struggling into dancing. I'm also very ardent, you know, because there's habit words out there. Everybody talks about impact investment. I want to have an impact. I'm like, really? You want to have a short, violent encounter? What about a long, curvy influence? Yeah. And the word influence comes from astrology. It's flowing. You know, it's all part of how do we insource our authority, you know, for everyone to define for themselves what it is to be a good citizen, what it is to be a good earth citizen. And the more we all insource our authority, it sucks the chi out of outer tyranny, right? Just self-possessed people capable of being equals in a community. So
you're saying all of these unconscious ways that we communicate, in a sense, it gives our power away. But if you think about language more carefully, then we can begin to reclaim that in a very profound way.
Right. Well, you know, Saturn is associated with our goat, right? It's our little goat. So when we say, oh, somebody got my goat, right? It comes from racehorses who were given a companion goat that was their best friend. And bad people before a race would get a horse's goat, leaving it all frantic. Very bad.
Oh, no.
So, but once we have that metaphor, we have self-responsibility. Oh, somebody got my goat, but I see my goat coming back even friskier and less obedient than before it got, right? And then just for all of it, you know, call our goats home, feel its, you know, stare into the goat's little outer space eyes, right? Feel the goat's little warm breath nuzzling our palm. We go, ooh, what a good goat. I am self-possessed. Yeah, you know, and it's also the strategy that whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. It's why we want to be critical and discerning, but not judging, because judging is imprisoning. We put on the table, everything can be liberating or imprisoning. Astrology, podcasts, you know, whatever the thing is.
You say that language is the astrology of liberation. I'd love to ask you to unpack that slightly, because I know a lot of people listening to this podcast are meditators, for example. They have a particular idea of what liberation is. That may be a little different than how you think of it, or maybe it's similar.
Well, if we are self-possessed, it's a lifetime aspiration. And then it's also part of our dedication. Saturn is dedication. And, you know, throughout 2024, Saturn will be in Pisces, that says the most Saturn realistic part of us is our dream. Our vision, our dedication to that. And it reminds us we can't even be who we want to be by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. So it's also saying, well, how do I want to be? You know, we make our declaration, everyone customized. It's like, I want to be critical and discerning, but kind, right? You know, I like wonderful rascal person whose name will come back to me. But she says, every morning I wake up and I brush my teeth and sharpen my tongue. And it's like, oh, that's good. So it's like, I want to have that, but with kindness. One of the best medicines we can brew to have deep discerning, like what's really, it's a lot that is really creepy, you know, with a kind heart. And it's like, ooh. That's like the best, because it's, you know, for people who don't notice much, who go, oh, it's all love. Like, there's just no power to that. You got to know how creepy and dangerous it is to bless it. And that's really power. But we can't really do that on our own. You know, we make our vows and go, oh, however we want to address the divine spirit of trickster that animates the universe or everyone. Hold me to this. This is what I'm dedicating to. This is what I want to be, you know, hold me to this. And backstage goes, all right, we will. And again, may our manner of relating be liberating rather than imprisoning. May our manner of relating be an offering, liberating, as opposed to an imposition, imprisoning, no matter what we call ourselves, you know? And that's just a fun thing to keep with us forever for ourselves and for others. Like, is this an offering or do I feel squinched, you know?
You said this other thing just before we started, when we were just talking, language is the original participatory magic, which I thought, I mean, that intuitively makes a lot of sense, but I'd just love to hear you talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, well, it's like, how long will we have war? As long as we have war metaphors, right? And it's like, okay, war metaphors into the cauldron. And that's why the use of the word vulnerable as a relationship virtue. And it's like, no, I use the etymological dictionary a lot, like what do words really mean and where do they come from? We're tracking them back to the original. So the word vulnerable is a war word. It comes from the battlefield. It means woundable. So I just remember somebody was saying, oh, I found the vulnerable parts of my friend and I showed the vulnerable parts of myself to him. And I, being a rascal, said, oh, that sounds kinky. and he said, well, what do you mean? He took umbrage. And I go, well, it means woundable. And he said, no, it doesn't. I go, Oxford English Dictionary means woundable. And then he was still grumpy. And he goes, well, what would you replace it with? And I go, well, it's not the same, but see what it feels like. I found the available parts of my friend and I revealed the available parts of myself. For me, that's much more fun because it's I found the woof woof want to play.
So there's a place for vulnerable as a word, but the way we use it is so kind of cavalier. We're revealing this this blind spot.
People being attacked by rockets are indeed vulnerable. They are woundable. Right. And then...
Oh, I see. So by using vulnerable, you're setting up all relationships to be a kind of war.
Well, a kind of sadomasochistic, kinky thing. Oh, you can wound me. Oh, I can wound you. It's like tragic, romantic, melancholy, the shadow of Pisces and Neptune. We don't have time for that. So Pluto, you know, as a symbol, right? And it's a planet and it symbolizes, it's a cauldron, you know, its little glyph is a circle of spirit being cooked in the crucible or the grail. But it proffers to us a cauldron. And one of the huge things about 2024, you know, just now-ish, is Pluto changes signs, right? So it's been in Capricorn, the structure of the world, since 2009 for 14 years, and it just entered Aquarius a little bit in the spring of 2023, and then it went back going, no, let's go back into the structure of the world and discover what forms of community support are collapsing, what forms are not based on cooperating with nature's ingenious patterns, healthcare systems, you know, infrastructure, condos built on sand, corruption, right? So Pluto entered Aquarius on January 20th of 2024 for 24 years, longer than any other thing. And it's like, this is the realm of community. The toxic mimic of community is a cult, right? A cult is where we outsource our Saturn, our authority to a celebrity or anything like, oh, and it's like, it's going to be toxic, even if it's just to a movie star or an insane psychopathic clown, either one, we want to insource, you know, and Aquarius is the realm of Saturn discipline and Uranus wildness. And it says, well, any community is a balance, how much structure, how much improv. And my quip to myself is, I can be lonely on my own, but it takes a group in which to be alienated. Okay, so there's that thing. But like, what is our definition of desirable community? And it's from community that ingenuity and solutions will arise. So it makes the realm of politics complex because we want to keep our authority, but we want to define, what are we hiring? What's our definition of wise leadership? And I always go to nature. What's nature's teaching about wise leadership? I mean, no other species on this planet would outsource leadership authority to incompetent dingbat who had no regard for the well-being of the community. It's like, only us. So yeah. This is really important now because, you know, tyranny's there and people in times of danger tend to save me, outsource. Yeah. And, you know, and when you were mentioning about, you know, an aversion to astrology, good for you. Because, you know, it's, you know, and psychics and things, there are real psychics, you know, but we don't want to outsource our authority.
You're saying something so important because I, like, the first time I ever got exposed to astrology was many, many years ago. A friend of mine was really into it and did a reading for me, and I could immediately see the power of the reading, and that it really did reveal a lot about my personality when I understood the arrangement of the planets, and it really did reflect some of the things that were going on in my life right then. But then I immediately felt like, to what your point about giving away your authority, mm-hmm. I had this kind of more immature understanding of it. I said, no, I don't want to know what's coming up. But then, because that'll interfere with my capacity to make choices based on what's really important to me inside, you know, and so I just don't want to know. But you're saying that is not about that. You know, it's about it. When you know something about how the patterns are, then you can make decisions to cooperate and flow with it in a way that's much more interactive and mischievous and participatory. And that's kind of the point, but it gives you an opportunity or ways into participating that are so rich and creative and multivalent. And at least right. That's what I'm finding.
And like all forms of divination, like when we pick a tarot card, it's an outward expression of an inner state. And it's like, oh, that is how I'm feeling. That is the issues that are in play. Mm-hmm. You know, I can see that now. And so
I can't come up with that on my own. I need a world. I can't come up with that on my own. I need a much bigger world to help reflect the creative possibilities of how to think about my own experience.
Well, yeah. And it's important, you know, all cultures have had their own astrology. I mean, ours is fragmented and dist and also profound and, you know, newspaper stuff and then real scholars and everything. But, you know, in India, as astrology arises, you have a caste system. You have a highly structured, kind of tyrannical culture. So the astrology is predictable, because if you're born into a highly structured, your life is predictable. You're never going to, you know, whatever. But we have a different experiment here. I mean, we everywhere, which is to be unpredictable, you know, to be authentic, self-possessed, participatory, you know, and to be creatively suspicious. So we want to, you know, welcome equal humans, equal us and the rest of our kin in participation. And I don't know how many of you, us all, know the word biomimicry, but it's pretty essential. And it's the work of this wonderful woman, Janine Benyus. Check her out, TED Talks, everything, who years ago said, rather than looting nature, let us borrow her recipes and her designs. Mm. Huge, you know, it's the sine qua non for life on this planet. Because there are beautiful and elegant solutions. She said, you know, our technology is mostly toxic and therefore very rude, you know, a high temperature, high poison. She goes, nature can't do that. Nature is experimenting with life. So nature's experiments, those designs are super beautiful. And this is something like, the more we know, all of us, the more effective we are, because nobody minds being asked, did you know? Unless we ask it in a snarky way, you know, did you know that the Japanese high-speed bullet train had a design flaw in that when it entered and exit tunnels, it created a sonic boom and broke windows? And so they go to Janine Benyus and the Biomimicry Institute, and she says, let's look at how a kingfisher bird enters water with hardly a splash, like poof. So they redesigned the front of the Japanese high-speed bullet train to be like a kingfisher bird entering water, and it enters and exits the tunnel with no disturbance in the field. And people, it just transcends politics. People go, that is so beautiful.
You know? And it's also like what you were saying before, where it's like, the more in tune you are with nature and intuition, the more practical your actions become, right? So it's not that there's here's practical and here's woo-woo. It's that they have to inform each other.
Right. Right. And I did an interview with her in 2008 and just re-listened to it and replayed it. And it's like, oh, God, it's so good. And one, she said, do you know how bees practice democracy? I'm like, no, tell me. And she said, well, when a community of bees, this is all important for us, needs to move, they send out scout bees, right? Everybody's got a different function. You know? And the scout bees go out separately. And she said, they're very careful. They might spend an hour exploring this hollow log. And then all the scout bees come back to the community that's waiting for them. And each one of the scout bees dances what they saw. And right. When the majority of bees go, we like your dance and your description of that place, then they all move there. Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, it is amazing, right? And see, nobody minds hearing that. Did you know how bees practice democracy? You know, you can say in the middle of a contentious argument, no, I didn't. You know, and then you go, and then people are like, oh, that's so beautiful. And the thing I also hold from that conversation, I asked her, you know, multiple degrees in biology and engineering. And I said, what is this biological term, vertical integrated hierarchy? And she said, oh, it's this beautiful thing in nature. It means everything in nature contains the plan of the larger thing it's a part of. And this is what makes for nature's ingenuity, resilience, and self-assembling. I go, oh, that's great. She said, a tendon in our arm is made of twisted bundled sticks, and each one of those is twisted bundled sticks, and each one micro, 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 fractal, 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 virgo, virgo, virgo. And so she was very happy for me to translate her scientific facts into our metaphoric guidance. So for all of us, as we inwardly wonder, what is our primary dedication? The inner dedication strengthens our outer signal, dee, 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 so we're more likely to be danced into place with the larger thing that we're a part of. It's so good. And so many ways to play, right? There's a million ways, but you know, self-possession, Saturn, let's stay with that for a moment. I went to a great, again, these memorable little things that we accumulate in our magic backpack. Went to a psychic masseuse years ago, and she said, oh, there's all these cords of people needing you, you know, attached to your solar plexus. And then she said, let's cut those cords. And we imagined a knife cutting them and above and below and even under our feet in case some of them were sneaky, right? But then the next part was crucial. She said, and let's see those people connected to their own wise autonomy, right? Uh-huh. So it wasn't, ooh, yucky vampires. It was like, nope, you'll be fine on your own. There you go.
And I think that's something that actually more like popular astrology is missing, because it's really this conversation about me, mine, how do I be better? How do I cut off vampires? How can I make money? How can I have a better relationship? And I think that was always my personal reaction against it. It's like, no, we're all interconnected. So the conversation can't just be one way. So what you're talking about is like, yes, discover where your energy vampires are, chop them off, and then
Heal them with compassion. The hungry ghost, feed them to what they're really hungry for. It's like, no, you don't want to suck off me. You want to connect to your own thing. No, that's great, Tasha, because everything, I call it Hinayana honky in a hot tub, personal salvation, mind, the thing like that. It's like, we can't afford that. It's important to remember that in 1930s, late 1930s and early 1940s Germany, lots of astrology and tarot and yoga. It was all super, but completely oblivious to the political world around it, and completely, me, mine, not, how do we have the responsibility to participate?
That's the thoughtful critique of the New Age, or the thoughtful critique of spirituality, is often something around that, that it's something like navel gazing about it, that it's all about the endless perfect story of you.
Well, and it is a great mystery. Like, how did, like, the astrology and yoga communities became overrun with, QAnon kookiness. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so I was wondering is good for us all. I wonder why. What makes people receptive to the delusional conspiracy virus? And I go, dogma. Anytime we believe something that we haven't earned, we're vulnerable to possession. And I think possession is useful. So again, I turn to nature and our backstage magic. Possums and honey badgers are immune to cobra venom. And cobra venom is like the COVID virus. It's a perfect match. It locks right on to mammalian breathing. But honey badgers and possums, the intelligence of evolution, have evolved so that their receptors have shrunk, so the venom no longer fits. So I like us imagining backstage in the democratic soul of the world and humans that the receptors to tyranny virus are shrinking so it no longer fits, right? So it leaves people like, what were we thinking? Oh, so, you know, the backstage is sometimes useful that way. And the dissolving of grievance, and this is an ongoing thing, but, you know, again, the image is like the cauldron, and Neptune chimes in and says, dissolution is the secret of the great work, you know, dissolve, solve e coagula, dissolve and reimagine. What does grievance want to be? What's the antonym of grievance? And it's gratitude, you know, and blessing. And for all of us to keep practicing this, because as grievances arise, because they do, I mean, you know, I'm working it, right? But sometimes I wake up in the morning going, ah, oh, that person, right? Or in, and it can be in our personal lives, but also in the whatever life. And it's like, ooh, grievance. It's a sneaky thing. And it runs on a, it's related to what fuel, what Mars do we run on? And to run on, you know, with the progressive team, I go, oh, okay, progressive team, you know, very often they run on the fuel of nya-nya. You go, we could do this. Nya, that won't work. If you knew what I knew, you know, you wouldn't believe in that. But, you know, that's it's all, it's like, we do know what you know. We're just more imaginatively playful. So buzz off, you know, and let's compost nya-nya into blessing. Discourage the bad, encourage the good. You know, and, you know, if we don't know what to do, invite in what does, you know. This also helps alleviate grievance, because it's like, oh, whatever's the most liberating thing, you know, come on in a way that makes us bark with laughter, maybe in the fullness of time, right? But it's like dedication and liberation and trickster and freedom are in cahoots as things we all have that are issued in 2024 going, you have this, you know, this is terrible. What would be better? Come on in that. And, you know, the more we know about everything, the better. I love Japanese science fiction writer Haruki Murakami, a very trippy guy. And in his novel, IQ84, the protagonists, the you, the us, notices that the world is out of sync and something terrible is going on. And suddenly there's two moons and people go, when did we get another moon? People like, we've always had another moon. And they're like, whoa. So they go backstage, right? Into the imaginative realm where we are. I mean, anything invisible, podcasts, we're backstage, right? So they go backstage and they begin to design and restore the world as it was, but even more wonderful, you know, and to bring it alive. And then at a certain point, they pull the sluice gates and have the desirable imaginative world pour into the actual world. And that's part of our assignment.
I just want to pause for a second and just play some appreciation here. I think to me, listening to you is the practice.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, it is the practice. You're just someone who's so internalized the kind of all these principles of, I call it like existential possibility, that the richness of the zodiac affords, and you're just constantly speaking it, that I just feel like I'm basically getting a kind of existential massage when I surrender to your ideas. I'm just getting this whole, it's wonderful. To me, you're the fruit of what happens to close attention to the zodiac over a lifetime.
That's actually kind of what I was going to say, is that, like, I'm a very open, receptive person, and I think, you know, Jeff is also very open. And so what you're talking about, like these changes that are available, to me, that sounds like there's definitely a rift in all of society. There's the people who are open and receptive to these images, where we're listening to everything you're saying and it's landing and we're like, absolutely. Like, you're putting words to feelings that were just kind of in me. And then there's a experience and a kind of person who is so closed off to the conversations of symbolism and nature. Like, how
is there an astrology for them?
Yeah. Well, it's like, how do we bridge that? Like, how do we not just preach to the choir and talk to people who are already receptive to this?
Well, again, just for fun, we keep playing when you said, and the problem is this, and I go, well, what if we replace the word problem with assignment? The assignment is this. And Neptune says, whatever we wonder about, you know, attracts a kind of guiding augury. Like, I wonder. Now, I mean, I step in to hot reactive fields with crazy people just to hone the skills of spiraling out of polarity, because polarity feeds tyranny, right? And it, and everything out there is to get us outraged. Even this is a horrible thing, and you click like angry emoji, right? And it's like it's feeding tyranny. It's feeding tyranny. So how do we spiral? You know, in nature, nature's way of resolving conflict is a spiral. Whenever opposite forces come together, spiraling. So but it's also the assignment is the dream news. You know, everything on some level, it's an experiment, is us. Now, why would I be casting somebody in my movie to be an ignorant, cruel dingbat? In case I am, let me throw that script into the cauldron and ladle out something more fun. Saturn is our casting director. And you bring up just a really crucial, crucial point, which is, you know, into the cauldron, what do we want to toss? And I go, you know, everybody gets to nominate. I go, addiction to having an enemy. I'm really keen on addiction to having an enemy. It's so crucial. You know, just everything practical and metaphysical, and everything metaphysical is practical. You know, the conflict in the Middle East, the horror. In the 80s, the Israeli government dragged the blind sheikh out of prison and funded Hamas to create Hamas. They did. I mean, that's just a fact, right? A tyranny needs an enemy, even if it has to create it. And they're like, no, this was good because it will destroy Arafat and the PLO. So it's like, oh, very sneaky. And then surprised when the monster comes alive, right? But they're complicit. And we go, oh. And then how do we go to a deeper form of unity? How do we dissolve? You know, and that's where we ask for forces larger than ourselves. Like, may we compost the addiction to having an enemy? It's like learned Druid John Michael Greer says, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something and you will only get heat, right? What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. We're all in this thing together. So when I've talked with QAnon or Trump supporting kinds of people, it's like, it's a very challenging assignment, right? It's like, But see, being surprising, there's no prison for the unexpected. So in the middle of the thing, I go, well, what's your definition of wise leadership? What's your definition of the function of government? And they go, oh. And with one guy who was like, you know, Trump, I go, well, what's your definition of the function of government? And we sort of started off together and we said, the purpose of government is to, when we both said, protect the Commonwealth. And then we did high fives. And it's like, yes, we found the third thing. We found the thing, you know, work. So these are all things to practice, you know, and when I'm in a hot circumstance with possessed, I think possession by mob mind is useful. My exit blessing is, may we all awaken tomorrow self-possessed rather than merely possessed, right? And everybody likes that, right? Crazy people, tyrants, they go, yeah, right? But it's effective. But everybody design your own exit blessing, you know, may it go well for you.
I think something that I'm noticing that's kind of answering my question is that, like, astrology, for somebody like you who's like an expert at these deeper symbol structures, it gives you kind of a fluidity in everyday life, you know, where, let's say, for example, somebody whose system of symbols that they talk with are left and right and conservative and liberal, that's then the terrain on which you're fighting, right? But if you can go deeper and use these deeper, more fundamental symbol structures that we can all use and tap into, then suddenly you're not fighting political party you voted for, but now we're talking beyond it and it's much more fluid. And then you can bridge those gaps between people
and we're all practicing. These are practices. So, you know, I went to CPAC twice, not in the Trump era because that was even too toxic, but it is among a gathering of the most toxic people on the planet. It's the Conservative Political Action Conference. But I go, are there any allies here? And there are always allies somewhere, right? So there was these Austrian Ayn Rand economists, and one of them even had an eye patch and a cane. And I felt I felt contempt, like, ooh. And then I was like, right, something we all have. It's a gift present for everybody listening. We all have a harumphitude composter, because only when we've composted harumphitude is conversation possible. So I go, ooh, contempt. That's the death of relationship. All right, let me throw my contempt and disdain and my condescension for these people into the cauldron. What, what. And then they headed right over for me. And they were like, you, who are you? What do you do? And I said, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the liberating trickster within us all. And they were like, oh, that is so cool. Right. And then if I'd said I'm an environmentalist or I'm an NEist or an activist or whatever, or even an astrologer, you know, there's no prison for the unexpected. If it's expected, there's already a prison. But they'd never heard of that. Right. And they were like, OK, now we're all liberated into having a quite interesting conversation. And I just want to, you know, I'm practicing this all the time, which is composting harumphitude, you know, mean-spirited, undemocratic, condescending. You know, the word condescend means we all go down together, right? It's not democratic, you know. And to restore, you know, the innocent dignity of our child heart, which is not vulnerable, right? It's like, huh, and full of curiosity. So let me bring up Jupiter as a part of all of us, and it's so beautiful. And its dance throughout the year is in such harmony of focus and expand and dedicate, magnetizes opportunity. You know, and Jupiter is called a guardian angel in medieval astrology. And it works in several ways. One is for those who look deeply at the world's poison, it's like, whoa. In that form, the guardian angel is like a wise ancient grandmother that comes up behind, you know, all of us behind, you know, Tasha and Jeff and me and everybody listening, and goes, how about a cup of tea? Let's snap the trance on the hood. And the other way that I really like is each part of all of us represented by a planet has a default setting, like, but Jupiter's primary default setting in response to everything is curiosity. And that's like the best guardian angel ever. It's like, oh, the world's on fire. Oh my God, what are we going to do? And Jupiter's like, how interesting. Let's go. We wonder what we're going to do. So to all of us, you know, we just encourage. I so prefer that word to empower, right? We encourage, which means feed the heart. Empower is a government term that means you empower a committee to do something, right? It's power from outside. So it's sneaky. So anyway. But also just keeping our language fresh. The more words, the more myths, the more metaphors, the more avenues of participation, and the more freedom. You know, if people haven't heard of something, they don't have a prison for it, right? And so that's what I'm always working with our progressive team, because there's so much infighting among good people, right? And I love Alison Lurie's, you know, wonderful mean quote. She said, the reason academic politics is so vicious is because the stakes are so small.
I love that. I thought that was Kissinger.
No. Don't dare confuse those two. Right. Bless his heart, may be redeemed in some future universe. Right. Well, that's also, you know, how do we do blessings for, you know, we're allowed to set in motion. This is the Jupiter Uranus liberating blessing part of our participation. You know, we're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipient. Right. So, you know, tyrannical people doing terrible things, because we are friends of their soul. We are friends of their indictment and accountability, right? Accountability is the sine qua non for democracy. And, you know, crafting these blessings, everybody, you know, may those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. That one works really well. You know, again, these take practice, right? And the world is full of needing this. But in small personal ways, I've seen that be very effective, you know. And then just for the weird fun of it, extending our curiosity everywhere, you know, and the pandemic, you know, the Netflix pandemic, you know, I found this kung fu movie called Judge D and the Four Heavenly Kings. I'm like, let me try it. And it starts off as a kung fu movie. And you go, but at the end, it's like, I can't do it justice, but here's the gist of it. There's demons and bad people and horror and cruelty and everything. And the wise Taoist comes in, and everybody's like lavishly dressed in gold and ornate things. And he comes in with worn slippers. And he says, enlightenment can wait. The situation's so dangerous. And the demons and bad people come before him and they hurl this force at him and his head is in a cage and immediately their head's in a cage. And he goes, and the Taoist goes, we're all in this thing together. And he does this genius thing. It's more better than I can do it. He talks the demons down into repentance, rethinking into the ground, and everybody's prisons come off. And he goes, and he says, sorry I was so late. I didn't know it was so dangerous, right? You know, and we want to bring that in. And I do want to stress to, I mean, I know you have an international audience. Tyranny is everywhere. It's everywhere. It's like, you know, earth, life, participation, tyranny, dominance, cruelty, end of the world. It's everything that everyone does, thinks, feels, matters enormously. People talk over and over about, you know, the Kairos moment, the fulcrum. It's tippy. But I love Terry Pratchett saying, magic is easy. You just find the balance point and blow. Right. May it be. And this is where we're just priming the pump of our blessings. Americans especially are blessing illiterate. You know, all other cultures are really woven together by blessing. And underneath all the cruelty and mayhem in the Middle East, those are cultures of blessing. You know, the Bedouins in the desert, you know, their greeting is, halu, change your direction, come this way. There we go. You know, and if we were all to become more Bedouin, we would reframe refugees as pilgrims going, oh my goodness, you must have suffered so much and endured so much and you must have so many stories and they must be the stories we need. Please come in. Please come in. But my friend Deborah, who lives in Syria and Vermont, like you do, the small things, like we were in a truck stop in Syria having the most beautiful meal and all the truckers were reading poetry and it was really great. You know? And the young boy waitress says, anything else, madam? And she goes, Salam Tek, only your peace. I'm like, I love that.
Wow.
Is there anything else you would like? Only your peace. Just woven in. And, you know, Deborah and I have created, you know, kind of blessing poker because that's how it is. You know, morning of light to you. And may the divine sprinkle your path with rose petals that you and all your children and your goats may prosper. And the person responds going, morning of light to you. And even more, may there be, you know, gardenias, you know, around your the thing and may all go well and may unexpected, you know, buyers for your carpet show up. You know, it goes on like that, right? You know, and again, Americans hardly even know what a blessing is. They're like, well, may they realize what dingbats they are. It's like, that's not a blessing. Come on, team, you know, work on that thing. And the blessing and the prayer. And that's why I have an ardent, you know, participatory that each person define politics for themselves. Because people are like, I'm a spiritual person. I don't deal in politics. I'm like, okay, how about politics is Pluto and Aquarius? Politics at its deepest form, underneath everything, is simply dedication to community well-being. Let's go for that. Yeah, let's go for that. Our word idiot comes from Greek idiotis, which meant somebody who was so irresponsible as to not participate in politics, in political well-being. And I just want to ardently, you know, in whatever form, I mean, if you're lighting a candle and sending blessings out into the world, you know, okay, fair enough. Whatever form, but some form of participation, because the 2024 election, there's many in the world and also in America, the planet is on the line. You know, for people not engaged, they're like, oh, the candidates are all the same. And then it's like, oh boy. And, you know, for everybody globally, there is a plan by the most nefarious dementors, the devolutionary nadir of our rogue species, who have something called Project 25. And I just encourage everybody to check that out. It's the Heritage Foundation and all the right-wing groups say, if any Republican wins in America, we will abolish the Department of Education. We will abolish the EPA. We will have drilling everywhere. It goes on and on and on. It's like, whoa. It's like, this is serious, team. This is serious. And I look at the election chart, you know, and it's really inviting all of us to play.
Right, because it's-
if we don't know how to participate, we become possessed. Either if we know the myths, we can participate in them. If we don't know them, we're possessed by them. I tease this into the political world all the time because we are always possessed by what we don't know. So we know that cultures symbolically embedded their science in their myth. So science and myth are very happy together, only in the modern world, you know. So the Venus orbital cycle is the anonymous. Venus will be the evening star for like 9 months and then get close to the sun, disappeared, called Venus going to the underworld, and then rises the morning star for like 9 months. In Mesoamerica, it's Quetzalcoatl, and it's about same Venus cycle. And so when Venus disappears, you know, the Quetzalcoatl myth is Quetzalcoatl is a pretty good leader, but Tezcatlipoca, the lord of the smoking mirror, speaks to him and goes, "You're getting old. Here, drink this balche, drink this intoxicant, drink this power political intoxicant." So he does. And he does terrible things, and he makes deals with corporations and sleeps with his daughter and does terrible. And he wakes up in the morning going, "I've been very bad, and I must go away and find real leadership." So in Mesoamerica and in Sumer in the West, people would understand that as a time to reclaim good leadership in everyone's heart, not one person, right? And so at the heliacal rise of Venus, when Venus returns as the morning star, like, oh, in a terrible mistake, it's when Cortez, the thug, shows up and they mistake the human thug for the god. It's like always a bad idea. And when I was covering the Republican convention in 2016, it was the same cycle. Now, these people did not know about the Venus cycle, but they were possessed by it. And Venus was just about to rise, and people there mistook the befoibled Trumpian person for the god. It's like, no, no. And even if it's a medium okay human, no, we're always invited to like never mistake the myth, the human thug for the divine, because here's community again. It's wise leadership meant to be born in each heart, not one person, mm-hmm. not one celebrity, you know. And this is really, really important, that we not outsource, right? That we insource and we have our own standards. Is it guiding us to spiral out of polarity, or is it running on grievance no matter what it says, you know?
Mindful that we're like running out of time. So just as a takeaway in the end, what's a doorway in for people who don't feel in tune with, you know, astrology or intuition and symbols? What's a doorway in so that they can start to connect with these things?
Nobody needs to know astrology or even mythology. It's in us, you know, and let me just say, you know, our Uranus, our coyote trickster, it's a coyote, it's raven, it's seeds that sprout after cataclysm. It's part of nature that can do impossible things, and it's in all of us. And let me just go back for my accomplice, Stella Coyote, an actual coyote that I lived with. So we created our own creation myth. I said, long before there were humans, coyote sets the whole shebang going with a liberating sizzle of lightning, just poof, and this unique, creative, resilient, ingenious part sizzles through all plants and all animals and us too, and comes awake in all of us because we need it now. And this is the part, regardless of studying or the whatever, the thing, that's all fine. But it's, again, it's the part of us that knows. It's our own wise intuition. You know, do I go left or right? Do I go through? And that's why just forget all the astrology and the language and the myth and everything and just go, what am I dedicated to? And then everything is an ally. We say anxiety is a meter that goes up when we go away from our intuition. You know, like, do I want to go to this gathering tonight? No, 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 no. Do I want to stay home and read? Yes, yes, yes. Or vice versa. It's like, oh, self-possession. Self-possession. And so that inner wondering, like, what am I dedicated to, is just simple. It's big. So with people the astrological language can be imprisoning. Just let it wash over one, you know, with the thought that there's little parts of everybody going, yes, yes, yes. It's heartening. It just says everyone has a ingenious trickster in them somewhere. Everybody has a wise leader person in there somewhere. Everybody has a woof woof. Everybody has a artful. It's just, you know, what it is to be human. And it's like, right. And I like my default setting to be woof, woof, want to play. And if somebody doesn't want to play, that's great too. right? Because if it's an offering, we have no attachment to how it's received. Woof, woof on a plate. No. Fine. Fine. We'll keep trotting along here. Very good. And may it go well for you, you dingbat. Okay, there you go. Over here. Playful. Playful wolves. One last little thing on leadership. You know, I lived with a wolf dog with the coyote as well. I know these people, they're quite different. But wolves play every 20 minutes, even when they're hunting and even when they're hunted. Playfulness, you know, and we know that people learn things. I forgot exactly the numbers, but it takes like when we're learning something like 20 repetitions to learn something. But if we learn it when we're playing, it takes 8, right? So playfulness is a leadership skill, and wolves don't operate on dominance. That's a human thing. They operate on charisma. And in wolf culture, charisma means who initiates play best. Not just play, like let's go hunting, but play is the top of their leadership criterion. And you can tell the lead wolf within 10 days of birth because it's the wolf pup with the lowest resting heartbeat. So I like that as a leadership model. It's the coolest wolf who engages the playful ingenuity of the pack. It's like, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's definitely something to aspire to or to connect to inside.
Yeah, I feel like you just put words to like what mine and Jeff's core ethos is. Like more play. How can we find people that want to play more, but like bring them into our circle of weirdos?
Well, we got playing. The ultimate existential play trickster artist here on the podcast who showed us how to dance with the energies of reality in a way that literally vividly this past hour. Yes. Thank you, Carolyn.
I just have to add my trickster friend David Grimes, when I was very depressed about some election, he goes, no, if we're not having fun, we're just not serious enough. It's like, okay.
Yes.
Right. And for those who are in hot, painful horror, we don't impose that on anybody, but we have a responsibility opportunity to suffuse the collective group mind with an expanding repertoire of cool out responses. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Woof, woof.
I feel like this is whenever this episode comes out, it's like I'm just gonna listen to it like 4 or 5 different times because there's just so much that we just talked about and so many different places to dig in.
Try getting a reading with Carolyn. I did that. I've got the recording. It's just dense. It's dense with illusion and literary invitations and symbolism.
Yeah, and can I say woof woof ways to play, you know, coyotenetworknews.com. So I'm always creating dream news councils throughout 2024, mm-hmm. sort of 7-week things, but dream news, meaning the news is a dream and let's dream it as well. And ways of participating in actually being influential.
Yes. So that's where people can find you and participate with you.
Yeah.
Also, the way that Jeff and I were introduced to your work is through what's it called again?
Radio.
Visionary Activist Astrology.
Visionary Activist
where
Astrology.
Where you say your phrase, just to highlight what you just said, my favorite line of yours, imagination lays the tracks for the reality train to follow.
Yep.
So much of it is a hymn to imagination too. And actually, it's actually reframed a little bit how I think about meditation. I used to think, meditation was about just being and accepting how reality is. And I'm like, wait a second, what about the whole becoming part? Yeah. What about the whole imagination part of like, thinking about how I want to come back in? And I mean, it's how I had been there implicitly, but you really helped animate and boost that signal in my life. So yay.
Yay. Yeah. And yay for your Pisces. Yay, Pisces. Who know imagination lays the tracks for the reality train. You know
yes.
that.
We know.
You are welcome. You are welcome. Coming back into exile.
I'm just kidding. Thank you so much, Carolyn Casey. We are your forever fans.
Yes, you're amazing.
To be continued.
Thank you. Your colleagues, right? Woof.
Colleagues. Oh, sorry, fans. Wrong language. Not empowering enough.
No critique. Only blessing. Thank you.
Only a blessing. I'm blessed by the encouragement of this collegial relationship.
Yay! Alhamdulillah. And may Trickster be with us all. Yay.
And now, join us for the after party at mindbodpod.com, where me and Jeff talk candidly about whatever didn't get said in this week's episode and chat in the comments with the whole MindBod squad. Don't forget to subscribe for new episodes every week. And if you want to support our crazy adventures, consider becoming a paid subscriber on Substack at mindbodpod.com. See you there.